Matt Donald here, folks. Worst microphone alert, because my microphone I normally use to record this is currently still packed in luggage in my car from a trip I recently went on, and I need to get this out quickly, so the microphone from my webcam, it is so very, very professional. And what am I going to do with this worst quality that gives new listeners their first impression of this wonderfully professional and sophisticated show? Well, I want you to subscribe to my Patreon, of course, at patreon.com/MatthewDonald, where we discuss pop culture featuring prehistoric animals, sometimes in flimsy ways, sometimes in ways that are a bit of a stretch. And this month, it's the most wonderful time of year, not Christmas, hell no, not Christmas. It is time for our annual Pacific Rim episode, because the dinosaurs were implied to be kaiju in that universe, and that movie is so god dang awesome that I want to talk about it all the time with everyone every year, and that's what we do. So check that out, as well as another episode about Jurassic World the game on the phone. That'll come out soon. It was meant to come out last month, but, you know, life. Christmas, holidays, you know, the holiday season. Hard time for everyone. Link is in the description for you can sign up to the Patreon. Thank you for your support, and have a good day!
Roar. Growl. Snarl. Bellow.
Welcome to Paleobites, the podcast that can't play poker because, like Dinochirus, we have terrible hands. My name's Matthew Donald, and each week I'm a rotating series of guest co-hosts talk about and rate a genus of prehistoric animal, be it dinosaur, mammal, arthropod, and so on. This week, I'm joined by someone who has just gone on a grand old adventure down to the faraway lands of Mexico, literally right underneath us. But still, it's Stephen Curro. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. Glad to be back.
Yes. Only for a bit, though. You're only back for a bit, but
yes.
But then you go back. But this is for like work, right? You're not just hanging out now.
No, it's basically a very long working vacation.
Oh, nice, nice. Sounds like when my when friend of the show, Matt Seivert, went to Japan for 5 years and made some good money. So
Right.
Most of that he was able to use to pay off his student debt, and now he's debt-free.
Which is,
considering he went to a private school, that's incredible.
Excellent.
So yes. I was like, yeah, stay there and keep doing that. And then he makes good work. He makes good money.
Nice.
But like most of us, he still lives at home, even though he's in his 30s. Economy, man. But to be fair, and also in Mexico, this is the same I've heard. It's actually very an American thing to expect to move out when you're like 18 or something.
Yes.
Most of the time it's like, yeah, family houses, familial casitas. You know?
Yes. So, in Asia and Latin America, it's expected that families stick closer together.
Right.
Whereas America, we have not been able to fulfill our usual expectation
right.
of moving out.
Which is so weird because like, in America, it's a very individualistic culture, but at the same time does not provide the resources to help us succeed as individuals. So we need that familial support. So
it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. No, we should go the Chinese or Mexican way, I say, or more probably the Norwegian or way where it's just they've got that all figured out, man.
Eventually, well, I think.
I think so. And I think by 2040 or 2030, we'll figure it out. We won't be able to reap the rewards. Our kids will, but it is what it is.
You got to start somewhere.
And honestly, I get it. Like, it's just, you know, it was that whole thing. That's like strong times creates weak men. Weak men create weak times. Weak times create strong men. Strong men create strong times. Strong times create weak men. It's a cycle.
We could just get to the strong times and stay there.
Yeah, we need to just
be nice.
Get to the United Federation of Planets already.
Oh, I've been saying that for years, man. Oof.
Can you imagine having a job that you do just because you love it?
Just because
you have it. All your needs taken care of.
Free healthcare, free food.
Yep, free everything.
Everyone is contributing to society yep. for the better.
So when you're at a job, you're there just because you love doing it. And some people are like, well, if it's like that, who would scrub the toilets? Some people like scrubbing toilets. It's like meditative, you know.
That's
for some
true.
People.
Some people
like busy work. Have you seen those angels of people who go to
I've seen it on TikTok and other places like that, where they go to places where someone has made a huge mess in their room. And it's the point where it's like psychological. It's like, oh, you let it build up because you just can't bring yourself to clean it. So there's like, it's horrible. It's horrible. There's like trash. There's cups full of stuff. There's food. There's drinks. Some people go there and clean it for free because they know it helps them and they know it's psychological at this point.
Where were these?
And I'm like, what an angel.
Where were these people when I had a dorm room in college?
Yeah, exactly. So, but maybe we, what society needs is for us to just ram it with a Kwahuli Sarah Thompson. Speaking of which,
interesting segue.
I do what I can. So since you have been in Mexico, I thought we'd talk about this Mexican dinosaur.
Yes,
there are not a lot of Mexican dinosaurs, and there's one 6 mile wide reason why. There were probably tons of Mexican dinosaurs. We just don't have any evidence of them because. Boom, you know?
Right. Well, yeah.
These are like in Western Mexico, far enough away from the impact that their fossils didn't get incinerated.
Exactly.
So.
And I mean, like, just geologically speaking, people, when you say Mexico, people think desert. And yes, much of it is the desert.
But yeah.
It's actually very mountainous in places.
I've
goes
definitely,
up and down and up and down.
Oh,
and
yeah. No, I've
out.
Heard. There's a part in my upcoming book, Teslamancer, where I talk about the Sierra Madre del Sur mountain off the coast of Guerrero.
Exactly.
So
yeah. Point is that Mexico doesn't necessarily have a lot of places with dinosaur-rich rock formations that we can easily get to. So
yes, exactly. There's some good mammals there, like because that's after the meteorite, so the fossils would have stayed. So and this is one of them. This is Kwahulia ceratops, or yes. So type, it is a Chasmosaurian ceratopsid. The subfamily of horned dinosaurs that have the two big brown horns like Triceratops and Pentaceratops, well, all those spikes and other adornments like Styracosaurus and Medusaceratops, you know. So there's two different families of the ceratopses, and this is the boring one. Size 13 feet / 4 meters long and 1 ton. It's easy to forget how enormous Triceratops was compared to the rest of these guys. Most of them are like 15 so feet long, 16 feet long. Then Triceratops is all 30 feet long.
Right, right. Then there's Eotriceratops, which might not even be its own species. It might just be a really big
Jack Horner strikes again.
Oh, that's one of
his? No, I don't know if that is. I just blame anytime someone lumps species together on Jack Horner. I've learned recently kind of is a terrible person. So So I used to say like, oh, I just disagree with his paleontological stuff. I'm sure he's a very nice man. No, he's not.
No. Actually did a research project on him.
Yes.
Back in college.
Yes.
Because I was interested in paleontology and I
takes advantage of young female interns.
Yes,
quite
that's
often.
When I I learned that he had just married his young intern, and I saw a picture of them together. And I was like, ugh. Then it came out even worse years later, like with his behavior. Like, oh, God.
Oh God, he's been me too'd basically. So, oh boy, guys, us men, it's not that hard to not take advantage of women. Just don't do it. Why is it so difficult for you?
So I don't know what his problem is.
Anyways, spike him on the horns of a Kwahuli Ceratops. Diet herbivore. Although there's the theory that some of these ceratopsians might have been like pigs. Well, not theory, hypothesis, I should say.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, because there's no evidence for it. But like, I can see that, like. So in that case, it could eat Jack Horner. So, I don't usually advocate for death on this podcast, but I'm still not now for legal purposes. My parole officer stated that I wanted to like. No, I'm just kidding.
right. But if hypothetically, no, I'm kidding.
No, of course. I mean, look, we're already bringing a hypothetical with bringing up a Kwahulia ceratops into the. All right, so time late Cretaceous. For some reason, the specific time is it's very specific. So 72.5 to 71.4 million years ago. There's something about the rock in that formation, I guess.
They were able to pinpoint it. That's interesting.
Pinpoint it pretty well. Location, Mexico, as we said.
Of course.
Described in 2010. Pop culture appearances. I'm sure it popped up in Jurassic World the Game somewhere.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, so Kwahuli Ceratops. It's named after the Kwahuli... region. It's one of the states of Mexico, one of the 32 states of Mexico, formerly Coahuila de Zaragoza, officially the free and sovereign state of Coahuila de Zaragoza.
Yes.
You remember Road to El Dorado?
Oh, I love that movie.
In the beginning, when they're in Spain, they're playing the loaded dice, and that one guy who they're playing dice with, his name is actually Zaragoza, according to the script.
Oh, no kidding.
Also, he's voiced by Tobin Bell, who is famous later on for being Jigsaw.
Oh, that's intriguing.
And it's a good thing they didn't scam him when he was Jigsaw with the loaded dice. Otherwise, he would have cut them up with like other terrible stuff.
They wake up on that robot playing a game.
Yeah. It's like, you want to play some more loaded dice? Do it before the buzzsaw comes
Right. But the dice are laced with poison, with acid.
And like acid itself doesn't kill you. It's incredibly painful. It's made out of platypus venom.
Good Lord.
Anyway, so...
Well, when I was in Tehuacan, which is a city in Puebla, it's about 4 hours-ish away from Mexico City by bus.
Nice.
And they have a museum, El Museo de la Evolución.
Oh, nice.
Museum
Evolution.
Of the Evolution. Yep. And it's actually a wonderful little museum with a beautiful dinosaur hall.
Nice.
And this is
you
where...
You sent me pictures, so...
And this is where I found... Coahuila ceratops.
Yes.
And
it looks like there's a skull of it here that's like mounted on the wall. I don't know if that's on the same museum, but that's where this picture is.
I don't think so. I saw a cast skeleton of one when I was in Tehuacan.
Cool.
There was only one original dinosaur skeleton in that museum. Interesting enough, it's an iguanodon, but it was closed for the day, so we couldn't go see it.
Nice. But yeah, so Coahuila ceratops, let's see, it lived in the formation. What else would have been down there? There probably would have been some sort of T-Rex, because we think T-Rex had a pretty wide range. Maybe not T-Rex itself, because it's a bit earlier than T-Rex.
Maybe an abelisaur?
Yeah. Well, no, abelisaurs are further south.
Further south.
Yeah, because they're like south. In Gondwana, and like they never really got up to North America. Don't you remember in Disney's Dinosaur? Carnotaurs, they never come this far north.
Oh, of course.
The lemurs, though, they can be here far.
Right.
Even though not only are they from Farlayer, they're from Madagascar.
There's so many things wrong with that movie, but it's so fun.
I love that movie.
Oh, though. I love it. I love it.
So would you say that you said it was a Cerro del Pueblo formation? That's where this is from. So is that what you said, something about the museum with that?
Tehuacan is in Puebla. Okay. So it's not the same state that this beastie was discovered.
Okay. So looks like in this area we got – oh, Cretosaurus is from here. I've heard of Cretosaurus.
Oh, interesting.
That's like – for those who don't know, listeners, it's like a hadrosaur but kind of smallish. I think I used it in Megazoic, Cretosaurus. It was the guy – it was like the foundry worker that got stabbed by – Dranax, after Dranax took over the body, whatever. So, Laterinus, another hadrosaur. Oh, these are all the hadrosaur stuff. So, Tlatlophus, that's Aztec, the TL. Tlatlophus.
Yeah, lots of it's probably not Nahuatl. There's the
Nahuatl.
Nahuatl or.
There's some indeterminate dromaeosaur finds or ornithomimosaur finds.
Lots of duckbills, apparently.
Yeah.
In this area.
Yeah, the duckbills seem to be very well. We don't have any full on theropods here. Mm-hmm. It looks like, except for Paraxinosaurus, the first dinochirid from North America.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that's one of those big, long, big ornithomimosaurs that gets really big. So that's cool. Yeah, there's some sort of tyrannosaur and some sort of other theropod there. So, yeah.
According to this here, they're theorizing that there were multiple mass death events that caught these dinosaurs, which suggests maybe there may have been a lot of storms and hurricanes blowing through the area at the time.
Well, makes sense, because like I'm assuming like in the modern day, the currents were good for hurricanes. Although, like, I wonder if having that inward – inland sea, would that help the hurricanes or make them worse?
I mean, if it's warm water and it can
I guess they would just keep going up there.
Warm water and low pressure that fuels a hurricane.
Well, the good, I mean, like, because like right now that there's tornadoes there, because it's one of the reasons why most tornadoes are only in the U.S. It's because tornadoes require warm fronts and cold fronts mixing together over flat land. And the most perfect place for that in the world is is Tornado Valley, because the warm air from the Gulf of Mexico and the cold air from across the Rocky Mountains collide in the flat Great Plains,
and that's why
tornadoes.
That's why we have lots of tornadoes.
Pretty much, tornadoes are almost exclusively an American problem because of that.
I've read they can happen anywhere in the world.
They really can.
But it's almost always North America.
Yeah, almost always. Like, I think Oklahoma has more tornadoes than like any other place in the world.
I believe it.
And like, almost like combined. So, but most of them are not as crazy as,
I actually taught a unit on natural disasters in my, my English class in Mexico.
And I
let the students pick, which disaster do you want to focus on? And they chose tornadoes because they don't really happen in Tehuacan.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they would have dust devils, I guess, but sometimes, but like, I don't know. It's like, I thought you were going to say, which one would you like to live through?
Well, no.
Because, I don't know, for me, it sounds like, I feel like this sounds insane because I don't like the cold. But Day After Tomorrow almost sounds kind of peaceful because I get to stay inside and bundle up for like, and I know it's only going to last 7 to 10 days.
That sounds, I hate the cold.
I hate the cold too. Oh, just like seeing them like at the end after he rescues them by the fire, all bundled up in blankets. And the room's covered in ice. Maybe it wouldn't be that great. Because they had just gone through the cold front, the eye of the storm with the super cold air.
What bothered me about that movie is that they're so tortured about burning the books. Why don't you start by raiding the offices and burn all of the paperwork?
Right.
And then burn the books
If the covers make it worse or better for burning? So
wouldn't be ideal, but it would be
saving. So in that case, I do the paperwork in the offices.
Burn the art of the deal.
I do like that whole part where exactly. I do like, or burn Mein Kampf.
There you go. Start with the real garbage.
But like I like that one part where they're looking through the library. That's like when they're about to burn Friedrich Nietzsche, but then that one guy's like, hey, there's a whole section here of tax reform that we can
there you go, exactly.
A whole section.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So this thing probably would have dealt with some natural disasters. It looks like based on the formation of the continents that this was still connected to Laramidia. Very much so. It was not from Appalachia. Did you find something?
I just read here the latest exhibition to this region revealed remains of two duck-billed dinosaurs, as well as the remains of carnivores, including large tyrannosaurs, like we suspected, and more diminutive velociraptor-like predators.
Nice.
So there were dromaeosaurs and tyrannosaurs.
That seems to be the case in northern parts of the world at this time, because like even in Asia, you got Tarbosaurus and Velociraptor, and in Europe, you got Pyroraptor, and I don't know if there are any tyrannosaurs in Europe that we know of. There were some Abelisaurids there, though. That was like the only place in the north that Abelisaurids were found.
Yeah.
So
I don't think there were any tyrannosaurs in Europe. No.
No, I think it's just Asia. But to be fair, it's also like ceratopsians. They seem to be almost exclusively North American and a few in Asia. So there's no African Triceratops, which is kind of sad because it makes me think of like rhinos. I think it'd be cool if there were some African.
There aren't any African ceratops.
No, they're pretty much all in North America and a few in Asia.
Really?
Yeah.
Hold
on. Let me just double check this because this is a factual podcast. That's about surprising. Facts and not feelings.
Right.
And even though I feel
what
like.
What is your research?
No. Let's do research. Okay. Ceratopsids. All known species, all but one species you know from Western North America, that one being Sinoceratops, I guess, the one made famous from Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. So they're all from Western North America. And to be fair, this doesn't include the Protoceratops, or like the earlier ones, like Protoceratops and like, so those are from Asia. But yeah, the rest of them are from North America.
According to this, Quahuliceratops had the largest horns above its eyes of any known ceratopsian.
Oh, really? By, overall or based on this relatively?
It just says the largest horns.
I mean, cool. So the biggest horns possible.
And it had a very thick nasal bone with a relatively small rounded nose horn.
Yeah, because it looks like based on this nose horn is very little. It's like a little bump more than anything.
Yeah.
Most of them seem to have just the brown horns. Like Zuniceratops had just the brown horns.
It's interesting. Some ceratopsians, their horns, they look like – I mean, you wouldn't want to mess with any of them. But some of them look really deadly, and some of them look like that's just really goofy.
No, exactly.
It's not going to defend you at all.
Right. I think it's interesting how the Chasmosaurians and like this, they tend to have the Fenestrae, the big holes in their skull. But if you look at Triceratops' skull, it's solid. Like, why is there no Fenestrae in that one?
It's just
a big chunk of bone.
It's a rebel.
It is a rebel. So, yeah, I know some people will take issue with the Sinoceratops in the Jurassic World movies having the Fenestrae visible in the real animal, like the whole thing. I think it makes it look cool. It makes it look like a dragon. And I also it's probably not true, but it makes a unique looking design. And so I don't mind, especially for a non-documentary, you know.
It's interesting, but I mean, that's that whole debate of what does the animal really look like compared to its skeleton.
Well, like, I know some people took umbrage with the Giganotosaurus in Jurassic World Dominion, of how it looked very crocodilian and had like a hump and all that sort of stuff. Colin Trevorrow, the director, showed the skeleton of the use of the model animal, and it's the skeleton of the animal. All that other stuff is just kind of lumps and other sort of stuff, like that wouldn't fossilize on the bone. And also, to be fair, the skull shape of that is actually way more accurate than most depictions of Giganotosaurus. It's not as round as other people. It's more triangular. So, And yeah, the hump on the back, like a concavidator or an acrocanthosaurus, that's purely speculative, but it makes it look cool.
I was more annoyed that they put Tyrannosaurus and Giganotosaurus together in the same geologic time period.
Did I ever tell you my idea to make a more accurate version of that opening scene and therefore kind of make a new villain for the movie rather than Giganotosaurus? Mm-hmm. One of the issues is that you can't really have more than one big apex predator in a region like that. So to have a fight between the two of them, it would be kind of difficult. I was like, wait a minute, there was one other than T-Rex. And it's called Quetzalcoatlus. So have like a ground-based Quetzalcoatlus. Like it still can fly, but it's mostly on the, we think they're mostly on the ground anyways. It's the one that fights the T-Rex at the beginning. And it like pokes it in the eye or so, something to kill it. Like,
that would hurt.
And then in the modern day, the Quetzalcoatlus that takes the plane down, that's actually the threat of the movie later on. And can you imagine that scene after they've all reunited the groups of the old group and the new group and then walking through the forest? It's not a Giganotosaurus, but a Quetzalcoatlus walking through. And that sounds horrifying, seeing this Slender Man-esque sort of thing through the night with its long head just like.
Well, it's funny you bring it up because in that museum in Sepahan, they have a life-size model of Quetzalcoatlus.
Enormous.
It's huge. Like, you don't realize just how big this blasted thing was.
When I talk about like it fighting the T-Rex at the beginning of the Cretaceous prologue, standing on the ground, it was taller than T-Rex probably. Right. it's crazy.
I do question like, you know, how fragile its body was.
Oh, probably pretty fragile. It's a glass cannon.
It had to be light to fly. So if the T-Rex got its jaws around it.
Yeah, dead. But so just don't let it. So just make it a particularly mean Quetzalcoatlus, particularly buff one. He's hit the gym a few times. Can you imagine a Quetzalcoatlus like grasping on his toe limbs and just lifting away? I find that stuff funny. Anyways, so Quetzalcoatlus, it lived in Mexico. It looked like Triceratops except smaller. Had big brow horns. That's pretty cool. And it was from Mexico, which is also, like I said, which is also really cool. It looks like it was related to its closest relative was Bravoceratops, which I think is a funny name.
Bravoceratops.
Bit self-congratulatory that. And it was close to like Utahceratops, Agujaceratops, Mojoceratops, which I think is funny. I need to do that one with you.
That would be excellent.
It just makes me think of Austin Powers. a Rhinoceratops, the one without a nose horn at all. But it's not close to the. Oh, that's right. Regaliceratops is a Chasmosaurian. I always forget that. I thought it was a Centrosaurian.
Oh.
The one with the crown horns.
Interesting.
I mean, I guess it makes sense. It does have the three horns. It's just smaller. So.
Lots of different ceratops. It's easy to get them mixed up.
Well, here's this. There's not only Mojoceratops. There's also just Ojoceratops. The same thing without the M at the beginning. So.
They got lazy.
Oh, it's from the Ojo Alamo Formation, so it's Ojo Ceratops versus Mojo Ceratops.
Okay, so are you sure it's Mojo and not Moho?
It could be Moho. Hold on, let me check. It name means opening lizard, referring to large openings in its frill. Wait, no, it's Chasmosaurus. What am I talking about? Oh, it redirected to Chasmosaurus. Horner! I don't know if it's Horner. Species Mojo Ceratops was made, let's see. Derived from Okay, so it is named after Mojo, and Mojo is an African-American spiritual practice, kind of like voodoo. So it does, it is Mojo.
So that's where Austin Powers stole it from.
Well, sort of like, it's sort of like juju, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, anyways, let's rate Kahuni. That's not it. Quahuila Ceratops.
Quahuila
Ceratops.
There we go.
1 out of 65 million. I'm going to rate like a 31 million. Because like, I mean, look, I like that it's from Mexico. That's cool. But other than that, it kind of just seems like a smaller Triceratops.
I'm going to give it... I'm going to give it 47 million
because
it still had the largest horns above its eyes.
That is true. It does do
that. Yes. So there you go. It gets that.
Yes. Now, on that note, that's it for this week. If you want to get a full show, and email me at palebytespodcast@gmail.com. You can find me on palebytespod on Twitter and palebytespodcast on Instagram. Where can they find you?
You can find me at my website, stephenccurro.com, stephenccurro.com.
Nice.
With a list of my short stories and my novelette, The Spark, and where to find them all.
Nice. Yes, indeed. There's a lot of good stuff on there. I also have some good stuff. I have a book series called Megazoic, available for print and Kindle. No Quahuli Ceratops, because I did not know of it beforehand.
Darn.
But I would have included it if I did.
Maybe in that prequel you're planning.
Maybe the one with – yeah, possibly, yes. And I have another book series, Teslanauts. There's a sequel coming out, hopefully – later next year. If you could, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would be much appreciated. It helps the algorithm. Here is a review from Iwi1347, 5 stars. What an idea. I love the creativeness in diving into one animal's place in pop culture. Love the episode and am subscribed. Thank you very much, Iwi. So, yeah. Or you could leave a 1-star review like Mr. Matthew Clucktoberfest.
Oh, dear.
It's like, no, just no. Stop, please. Never.
Wow. That's the review?
Oh, there's more, but it's like their attempts at humor are cringe-inducing, and I'm like, yeah. Sky is blue, the grass is green.
Doesn't it say that in the description, where we're being silly on purpose?
Though? Yeah, yeah. Yep, sky's blue, grass is green, paleobites is cringe-inducing.
Oh, give me a break.
Millennial cringe humor is the term, but yeah, anyways. Charmingly cringe, I say. That's it for this.
Millennial cringe humor.
That's what my fiance says. I'm like, I embody the millennial cringe. She's also a millennial, so... Okay.
Bah.
Bah, indeed.
Some people have no humor. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, look, my humor is pretty silly, I think. But yeah. Anyways, that's it for this week. Well, I'll get a hold of the show. Wait, I already said that.
Yes. All right. Goodbye, everyone. Oh,
yeah, adios. So long.
Adios. Hasta luego.
Yeah. Get out of here.